You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala, bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support harmony within ourselves and set the stage for practice.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Hold up. Who'll pay reparations on my soul?
Written many directions for the aid that was given. They gave us pieces of silver and pieces of gold. Tell me who paid reparations on my soul. Many fine speeches. Never really there, yes, but the heat in the summer was there and the freezing winter's cold. Now tell me who'll pay reparations on my soul. Call my brother a junkie, say he ain't got no job.
Man.
Can't depend on no one else.
Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. The other day was historic in the sense that the issue of reparations finally took a giant leap forward, in particular in the state of California. There was a 5-3 or 5-4 vote that said those who can trace their lineage back to slavery will be eligible for some form of reparations. Joining us this afternoon is somebody who's been involved with this intimately is Dr. James Taylor, no stranger to our airwaves, political analyst from UCSF, author, and freedom fighter. So, Professor Taylor, you know, welcome to the show. And tell us what's happening with reparations. This has been a project you've been involved with for a while.
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me back on, David. I appreciate it. And don't take it for granted. The San Francisco Reparations Committee, Advisory Committee, our task is to deliver a list of recommendations to the Board of Supervisors in the next year. And, you know, with some sort of recommendation to establish a reparations policy. I'm actually myself writing up the policy that would become law in Cal, or at least, whatever the legal status would be in the city of San Francisco. So I'm sitting around, you know, thinking through all of the history and trying to, you know, find the right wording for what would become the policy of the San Francisco reparations policy. So I'm on the policy committee with within the subcommittee on the larger committee. And, you know, Reverend Amos Brown is on both the San Francisco Reparations Advisory Committee and the California Reparations Advisory Committee. So we've been, given a lot of information, you know, through his seat in terms of calibrating San Francisco and the state's efforts.
How did this come about, you know, the state and the city? I mean, we've always heard that John Conyers, the late Congressman John Conyers, was constantly, I think almost throughout his entire tenure, would put up a bill to have, would put up a proposal to have reparations researched, and it never went anywhere. There's been a lot of conversation around it. You know, big shout out to groups like NCOBRA, you know, and others that have been really pushing this. Queen Mother, I forget her.
Audley Mother Moore?
Yes, thank you. There mm-hmm. you go. I remember she was always big on yes. this. But it just never took wing. So how did this happen in California? This seemed like a place that it would be the last to happen, but it happens to be the first.
Yeah, it's really interesting because California did not have African slavery. So when we're talking about reparations in California, we have to be historically accurate. California did not have African slavery to the extent, say, Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi or Texas did. Because of California being Mexico and not England, its relationship to race and slavery is completely different. So even though California is part of the, it's the youngest state, born in 1850. New York, you know, Philadelphia, you can go back to the 1600s. So California is 200 years younger as an American state than any of the East Coast states. And its cultural mix has always been very different because of the Mexican and Spanish soil, you know, that is the foundation of this place. The British culture was never able to take over out here in the West because it was so far away. So you had a combination of an interesting, diverse mix of Japanese, Chinese, Jewish, African American, Mexican, young people, all of their lives in California, in the Bay Area in particular, more so than LA, have always encountered that kind of rich diversity. And so that's, I think, you know, what you have here in California is a different kind of racial history. The people that should get reparations for slavery in California are Native Americans. Black Americans are not looking at reparations for slavery. Black people were not enslaved in California. California had a fugitive slave law in 1852 that it initiated in deference to federal law. So California's explanation is everything we did was legal and we had to do it, in other words, honoring interstate trade and interstate commerce rules in the name of federalism. So California had to recognize the right of a man from Texas to bring his property to California and it stay his property, even if that property was not legal in California. So California would allow, for example, a person to bring another human being that they owned into the state for 20 days. And then you have to take them back out. So you can come work on the mines, you know, in the 1840s, the gold mines. And this is a really interesting history because there's all kinds of stories, really brutal ones, but there were stories where African Americans were allowed to, you know, mine for their, you know, owners for 5 days. And then the weekend, they allowed the Africans to mine for themselves. So some of the Africans ended up getting rich through the mining. You know, not many, just a handful, but there are all kinds of stories. What I'm trying to suggest is California's reparations record and history is more about discrimination, land, property, you know, schools, jobs. Those are the things that California owes reparations for.
But they voted to look for the descendant of slaves. So how did that come about? Now, I know we had during the Great Migration, many people who can trace back their lineage, you know, Louisiana is one place that was a feeder to this. Mississippi, of course, right. is another place right. that's a feeder. But the actual vote, you know, at least on the state level, is that they're looking for those who can trace their lineage back to slavery. And that's what I wanted to have you on, because there was that big debate, you know, amongst the commissioners about which way it should go, with people making compelling arguments. Obviously, people have been ruthlessly discriminated against for centuries, whether they were in California, New York, or you know, Mississippi, based upon skin color. Right. We know that. We also know, as you pointed out, there were these laws that allowed people's property to be taken. And, you know, so those stories are all abound from South Carolina to California, where people have that. But this actual argument of just looking at those who can trace their lineage back is one that is an interesting one. And I would imagine, you tell me if I'm wrong, it's, I mean, there's enough people here, quite a few people, many people who escaped the terrorism of the South.
That's right.
To come here.
That's right.
And so, you know, that journey out west was to really escape the remnants of slavery and the attempts to keep people enslaved under a different name throughout the South, you know, with the convict leasing system, you know, the surgeons of the Klan, right. sharecropping, right. all that sort of stuff. So, you know, for your understanding now, where are we at with this since they decided to go with the descendant of slaves?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the race versus lineage debate is philosophical and political. Philosophically, we all agree with what you just said in terms of the impact of slavery across the board nationally, and people coming to California, which becomes a state dynamic, to escape what was going on back east. The lineage choice, I think, is more political. It's a practical political choice. And this is what Amos Brown expressed on the committee, that look, we can be philosophically committed. We know the injury was to all Blacks, but the practical political aspect of this mandate from this committee established by in the state of California with Dr. Weber has a very narrow mandate, a very narrow focus. Their focus is California only. And so the history of the North of the Southeast or New York or New Jersey and Connecticut, which all had slavery, is not California's business. This committee's focus should be on what did California do to injure Black people in California. That's separate from what California did to Indians. California Indians should have a reparations movement. In fact, they have. It was called Indian Gaming, and they got it. They got their reparations and continue to get their reparations. And I understood as a professor here, you know, 10 years ago, that Indian gaming was a unspoken form of reparations for the.
But was that a goal versus getting land back? Because we always had these land back movements, and it seems like the gaming thing is like, you know, nickel in the sky, so to speak.
Yeah. Well,
it's crumbs off the table. When really the real value is like, you know, I hear you, we got this gaming thing,
right.
but how about giving me back this land?
Right, right. And we saw that happen in Oklahoma, where the Supreme Court recently ruled that Oklahoma is Indian territory. And whatever that means in terms of federalism, you know, the court hasn't really decided what that means in terms of taxes, what that means in terms of the ability of Oklahoma Indians to become wealthy off of the taxes of other Oklahomans. You know, but the court did make that ruling. And, you know, we saw something similar in L.A. Where the African-American owned beach was returned to the family. These are, you know, that's reparations right there. That's direct reparations for injuries and returning the property. What happened is after the 60s was a period in which Black nationalists like Nkobra and the Republic of New Africa, Imari Obadeli and his brother, who were disciples of Malcolm, they kept this issue of reparations alive. They wanted five Southern states. Since Black people were the best agricultural, you know, workers and farmers, Booker Washington and everyone else understood, the RNA did, that Black people were in the best position in terms of, you know, the technology of farming in the South to do it. They did it better than the whites. They did it better than anybody. And that's why Booker didn't want Blacks to migrate to the cities, because it's like, we have the power and the ability through the land and our know-how to build an economic empire in the South. So the Republic of New Africa, which Tupac and Mutulu Shakur and Afeni Shakur and Asata Shakur all come through, believed in five states being given to Blacks. Now, this is the thing in terms of answering your question about what has happened. It was largely the Black nationalists that held up the banner of reparations for the last 50 to 60 years, so it was marginalized. It was when Randall Robinson wrote The Debt, What America Owes to Black People, that brought it to the liberal Black center, and then Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's probably more nationalist than anything, nevertheless, presented it in a way that was received well by the liberal intellectual and media and academic establishment. So Ta-Nehisi Coates, the article he wrote, The Case of Reparations, was a powerful update, because what it did strategically is it didn't focus so much on slavery's injury, because for the last 40 years, the Reagan Revolution very effectively quieted Black people on what slavery did to them by saying, one, we weren't alive to make you all slaves, and you all weren't alive to be slaves, so let's stop talking about slavery. And Black folk had to figure out a pivot, a move. They didn't have a good response. My good response is this: every state, every county, every city, every town in America that existed during slavery still does. All the people are gone, but the institution, the government, the state, which supported and actually created the injury, is still here. So the criminal who hoodwinked and attacked, you know, and created a war condition for Black people here is still here. It's the American state. So Callie House, there's a book by Mary Frances Berry called My Skin is Black is True, about Callie House and her efforts, and the Reverend Isaiah Washington in Memphis, Tennessee, with 200,000 followers in the 1870s, sued the American Treasury, the US Treasury, 56 for about 5 years of slavery. And that was the major movement for Black people in America before the NAACP comes along 20 years later and completely redirects Black people's focus for the next 70 years for integration into white society. Let me say that again. The original politics of Black America was abolition. After abolition, it was reparations. Reparations was the original Black politics in American history forever. And it's been forgotten because the NAACP, which was basically a white organization created to advocate for Black people, or as they called us, colored people, is not the National Association of Black People, of Colored People. It's the National Association for the Advancement for. So if you look at Google the image of the founders, you'll see maybe Ida B. Wells and Du Bois as the only Black people in the room when it was founded, and both of them were given marginal responsibilities. He was the journalist in the crisis, the advocate in the crisis, and she never really had a role after being in the room. So the NAACP comes and tries to make integration the most important politics in Black history, But if you study Callie House, you will understand that what Black people wanted from America was reparations, not integration. They did not want assimilation. They did not want white culture. They wanted to recover economically from the injury, the tort, the T-O-R-T, the crime, the act of war that slavery was. And this is the thing, David, that we don't have the intellectual tools, and also because time has moved on, to recognize the real problem of Black America is not a racial problem. Harold Cruz, Huey Newton, the Panthers, you teach at State, you know this, they understood there was a colonial dimension to being Black in America, just like it is being Dominican in the Dominican, or Haiti, being in Haiti, or being in, you know, Jamaican, right? Black folk ain't from Jamaica. They were brought there. Well, Black folk ain't from America. They were brought here. White folk ain't from America. And I think that's the thing that has to be established too, that the European is only from Europe on the whole planet Earth, right? Encounter these realities where race has become such a powerful thing. In California, the way it played out was not against Blacks as explicitly as it was against other groups, but Blacks throughout the history of this territory and state have been, let me be clear, Blacks were enslaved here by the Spanish after the first 250 years of focusing on Indians. In the last, say, 100 years, they saw what the Brits were doing, so the Spanish do turn to enslave Africans here in the Americas, throughout the Americas. That's why there are 130 million Black people in Latin America. They are brought here as slaves. They didn't come here voluntarily. Not one single Black group in the Americas came here voluntarily. The Dominicans, you know, with their commitment to being more Indio than African, as dark as they are, notwithstanding. So in other words, we are evidence of a crime. And we were a colonial entity as much as the 13 colonies were. Black people were a separate entity from the 13 colonies. We should have been treated like a 14th colony. And we chose to fight with the British against the 13 colonies. So did the Indians. And when we lost, we ended up stuck behind enemy lines. So Davey, what I'm saying to you and the audience is, Black America's real predicament is less racial and more colonial, but we don't have the tools, the wherewithal, the constitutional apparatus that would allow us to resolve the fact that we will, if you cut and paste, you know, 30 million Africans and bring them to America and drop them here, that's effectively what America did. And so how do you reconcile a colonial circumstance? This is what was known as the internal colony thesis of Harold Cruz and people like Huey Newton. They understood Black people's circumstance was also colonial. That's why integration is dealing with a similar dynamic. What is the relationship of Black America to the larger society? Is it colonial? Is it integration? Is it racial separation? All of that is about Black development and underdevelopment. And what racial oppression and slavery, Jim Crow, war on drugs, all these different stages of oppression have done, Davey, ultimately is underdeveloped group. And it ultimately developed America's full potential as a country and as an economic force, right? America is powerful, but it could be way more powerful if it would unleash its oppression and its obsession. The state of America has hated Black people for 500 years. The state is like a monster that's taken on, like Frankenstein, its own personality, and it's with Black people for 500 years.
So with all that being said, Dr. Taylor, and this vote that comes down and the policies that you and others are now writing, where do we go from here? What are the next steps? You know, especially if there is going to be a reparations policy, one that is probably more likely going to be emulated by other states. What does that look like? Is it tax breaks? Is it free tuition? Is it a check? Is it land? What does that look like? Acknowledging, as you said, this has been, you know, at least in modern era, the 70-year fight. And even before that, you know, were the main pillar for people post-emancipation. So, right. So where do we go from here at this point in time, and what would you want people who are listening to do?
Well, I think people should appreciate the importance of San Francisco and the Bay Area, Oakland, Berkeley. San Francisco is the largest city in America, indeed in the world, attempting reparations. Asheville, North Carolina is attempting a program. Evanston, Illinois is attempting a program. And now we have the state of California, and then we also had the city of Berkeley initiate something last week. Just like marijuana and marriage equality, David, they started here in the Bay Area locally, and then they germinated enough to create a new sort of mindset and consciousness that ultimately led to federal changes on cannabis and on same-sex marriage. That happened locally first, up to the national level. So that's why I think the reparations movement does have to have a two-level approach. One is local, because counties, cities, states were also criminals, slavery epoch. So I think Black people should be suing counties. We should be suing cities. We should be suing states. We should be suing the federal treasury across the board. But what we're seeing is a critical mass, as you say in your comment, you know, even defining who should inherit reparations by lineage is a precedent. California is setting a precedent like it does on the environment. California will set the precedent for any other major city. They will come and study our proceedings. And that's why we're very careful right now to document everything, because we figure whether we win or lose this battle, we want to document it for posterity, for scholarship, for the next generation that has to pick up this fight. So we understand consciously what we're doing is creating a record of history. We know that we are documenting the story of reparations in San Francisco at this effort. And again, it's for a number of reasons, for the city's own record, for the record of scholars who will study and write about reparations and these efforts to try to right the wrongs that have been perpetrated. I think at some point, you know, the critical mass, you know, we just saw Berkeley last week. We'll see more and more cities begin to do this. Oakland is overdue. I was thinking this morning when I was driving through Oakland, where is Oakland? Why isn't Oakland talking about reparations? Oakland did a great deal of harm. Davey, I think it's important to keep in mind, again, what Darity explains in his book, From Here to Eternity, is there are multiple stages of injury to Black people. Slavery, you know, everything in between that, up through lynching, all the way up through Jim Crow. And that's what Coates did. Coates brought it up to Jim Crow. Now, I think we need to bring up the conversation around reparations to the war on drugs injury, because everybody, most of us, many of us, that's our generation, we know what happened there. And we were told in the 80s, well, slavery's over. We weren't slaves. You weren't slaves. We weren't slaveholders. Even as the state was committing war against our generation. So the reparations should be about slavery and or Jim Crow and or housing policy and or, war policy, policing, et cetera. So the remedy would have to be, I think, tailored to the injury. I don't think there's a one size baby. I think San Francisco should come up with a remedy that fits San Francisco's history of how it dealt with its Black people. That's what Evanston's trying to do. Evanston's not focusing so much on the past in terms of slavery. Evanston looked at housing impacts of the war on drugs. And I think those of us who are talking reparations have got to modernize this conversation more than Coates has by updating it to Michelle Alexander's work and its influence in terms of the war on drugs and what it did to us as a people and did to others. And so for that reason, what I think has to happen is the same way the state, Davey, spent 150 years and as I said before, your comment, 500 years hating Black people. We had slave codes, Black codes, Jim Crow. Why can't the state discriminate in the same way it hated us, but loving us? Why can't the state use the same energy, the same money? Because I was at this major conference with all of these major scholars at Mills College a couple of years ago, and all of these important people from the Bay Area, sheriffs, John Burris, all these other people were in the room, and David, they were just throwing around all the amounts of money, right, that is earmarked for policing our people. And it was in the trillions of dollars. So I just blew up the room and said, let's give every black boy born, every black girl born from now on, $250,000 up front, because y'all are willing to invest it in them anyway. You're going to give them $250,000, but you want to do it through deviance and crime and punishment and correction and rehabilitation. Jesse Jackson said 40 years ago that if you don't invest in the child early, you're going to be trying to correct the broken man later. So reparations would be give every black child a fund of $250,000, like white kids have a $250,000 advantage over average black kids. That's a fact. So why not give every black child $250,000 so he never becomes a criminal? No, the very liberal white, the very conservative white, the very moderate person would say no to that. But they have no problem with the past 50 years of multi-trillion dollars of investment in underdeveloping and downpressing, as Bob Marley would say, the black group. What if we flip the script and invest trillions of dollars in black people's development? Davey, it's the last frontier. If America doesn't give reparations to black people, America is dead, because it has nothing left in itself. What's left in America is the redemption of itself through the elevation of black people once and for all. It would be the greatest moment in this country's existence if it righted its black relationship. But if it does not, you'll see what's happened in this country. They don't have much else, and that's what January 6th showed you. They, as Dave Chappelle said, do you have a country? And they told all of us no. And all we got left is the joy and the culture and the rhythm and the religion and the spirituality you saw of black folk believing in democracy down in Georgia when they turned it blue. That's the hope of the future of America, our young people. The young people showing their culture and their ingenuity and diversity and their creativity on TikTok, you know, and on these other forums that are positive. I'm not going negative. I cannot accept that racism is going to win the history of America. Black people have been fighting too long and they've won too many battles. We beat slavery, we beat Jim Crow, we beat convict leasing. We've even recently overcome urbanization and are now moving into some new stage. Right now, from 1970 to where we are now in the past 50 years, Black America has been in a slow, quiet, barely detectable out-migration from every city in America, and they're resettling in the South, and they're going to have a future in the South, and it's going to be amazing. But we've got to have reparations in order to do it from a standpoint of empowerment and not dependency and welfare.
Appreciate that, Dr. Taylor. You know, what we're going to do as I wrap up, as we're having this conversation about reparations, the question also arises, and it seems like it would just be fundamental. Do you see a change in policies? For example, we just did a show on the sheriff in LA. And one of the things we saw over the past 2-3 years, they've cost $55 million in brutality settlements. We're seeing the type of homeless population exploding throughout the state. Do we have policies where people will have permanent housing? You know, like you said, if you get $250,000, how about making sure, you know, you make an investment and say, every kid born has a house. There you have it. Can't sell it. It's your house. It's your, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The reason why we're here in this position is because of policies that were put in place.
Right.
Laws, and the question, and those laws have been modernized and tinkered with, but do we have a change in those laws, as you suggested, for the better? And that remains to be seen as we're sitting here watching school closures.
Right.
When people are saying, please don't do that, we're seeing increase in police. When people are saying, don't do that, we're seeing the ending of rent protection and eviction protection. When people are saying no. And so it just seems to be in sharp contrast as the state is going reparations, but we're seeing all these other laws that will almost nullify that almost immediately, because the policies will make it almost impossible for you to survive unless you have a certain amount of money and access. But that's just how I'm seeing it. Dr. Taylor, I'll let you get the last words and let people know how they can get a hold of you. Well, and I apologize for the noise, folks, in the background.
Thank you so much, David. I think, you know, to simplify what reparations is, Reparations is simply having the government on your side all the time. And that's what white people get every day. And it had it for the entire history of this country. Eventually, ethnic whites like Italians and Jews and Irish and Poles embraced it too. But originally it was for the Anglo-WASP culture, the Irish and others came along. But reparations, Martin Luther King explains this in that speech he gives when he talks about the county agents and land grants. And these are the very same people Martin Luther King says after they got everything from the government, who tells a Negro to pick himself up or herself up by their own bootstraps. Reparations is having the government on your side when the police show up. That's reparations. White people know the police on their side when they show up. When you go to the bank, you got FDIC. That's what reparations is, FDIC. And for 500 years, the American state has given the white group FDIC in every way and given everyone else whatever the opposite of FDIC is. And that's what we got to change. We got to change the consciousness. We see that the state can do good for one group if it wants to. It could do good for all groups. America could develop the black group, the Latino group, the young people of our country in the same way it overdeveloped the white population of this country. They came in rags and tatters, broke in the immigrant story. And look at them now. You think they did that because of hard work? Hell no, we were the slaves. We were building this land. How did they get wealthy? The American state created the wealth of white America, most of it at our expense over time. And as a consequence, that it must fix us. It must right the wrong of slavery, Jim Crow, and the war on drugs, injuries. And if we can do that, David, like I just said, I think the future of America is brighter than it's ever been. But if not, I think America's already dead. I think January 6th, death of America, unless reparations comes out of this next stage. We are at the point like we were with Reconstruction. We're looking into the 21st century like Du Bois looked into the 20th century. And when Du Bois looked into the 20th century, he said the problem of the 20th century is going to be the problem of racism and the color line. I'm saying we're there right now. We're either going in the direction of what is implied by a black president or what's implied by a white racist MAGA president. But we're in between. We're at the precipice of Obama and Trump. The question is, who will win the political battle over the next 50 years to give a different outcome? Last time, the reactionary forces won, and that's how we ended up with Jim Crow. Right now is the war. Right now is the front. And that's why they understand that, Davey. That's why they're doing everything they can with laws, with reapportionment, with redistricting, with going after women, going after transgender, going after everybody, because they understood that the cultural war is on. And a lot of people on the liberal side, passively are getting hit and, kind of like Chris Rock and not pushing back while they're being smacked on stage. And that's the problem of liberals. Liberals don't fight back. That's why when one liberal finally says something tough or hard, everybody jumps behind them. When a liberal says, no, I'm not going to act right. I'm not going to conform. I'm not going to behave. Then everybody gets excited because the conservatives never behave. They always misbehave and they get celebrated and they win by misbehaving. The Democrats and the liberals, because I don't think they love their constituency, Davey. That's the truth. I think Republicans love their racist constituents. I think the liberals don't like their diverse constituents. I think they have to tolerate us. And for that reason, they don't fight for us. I said this recently on another program. Trump loves his people. Who loves Black America? What leaders love Black America? I can say Barbara Lee does. I can say Maxine Waters does. I can say James Clyburn does. I don't want to say nobody does. But what I'm suggesting is, the relationships that are reciprocal between leaders and followers right now, we're at a point where we need to understand what time it is. And what time it is America is going to either go backwards to Jim Crow type racism, or we can actually have a future of racial democracy. That's what it was in the 1870s, and we ended up in 90 years of segregation. This time, if we win the fight, left and progressives and liberals and radicals, maybe the next 90 years can be one of racial democracy and other forms of democracy. I can be reached at USF and on Instagram is James Taylor 1699.
I appreciate that. I'm gonna leave off with this, because you mentioned, people who would love us, and I would say that saying it is one thing, but your policies
right.
say something else, and the policies that you support say something else. And to the degree that we have people that say they love us, but then would support imperialism, would support, you know, regime change, would support exploitation. And this is just me looking at it, suggests something else, that I love you, but I love this power. I love this money.
Right.
I love this Americanism, if you want to, even more. And so you're going to take second fiddle to this. I'm married to this type of concept and this type of policy and this type of politic. You're the side piece.
Yep.
And when push comes to shove, I might have to toss the side piece aside,
right?
You know, and attend to the business of what I'm married to. And I think some of the names you mentioned, Clyburn and others,
right.
I think, you know, their skin may be black, but their politics says that they're Democrat, or they're married to a exploitative politic first. And I don't know if that will ever change. And that's the other fork in the road, because you might not be able to reform something that won't reform, and you might have to go it alone and do something different. But that's for another show.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Taylor, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Like Cornel West said, you can't lead the people unless you love the people. And so we gotta, you know, try to figure out, I think, like you say, through policies, how we can move things forward. Thank you so much.
Real talk. We're gonna take a break. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan, Kim. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though.
Yeah.
Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't gone all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat it and any from the steel grave beats. They leave. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, I neighbor to please. Make a spoon shade on your name in the street. You go. It ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio. You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast.
Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
I just wanna ball. Wanna hit the mall. I just wanna get everything that I'm owed. I just wanna stop. Cause I came from nine. 40 acres and a mule, we can be on. I just wanna ball, wanna hit the mall. I just wanna get everything that I'm owed. I just wanna stunt, cause I came from nine. 40 acres and a mule, we can be on.
Reparations with 40 acre, plant seed for food. You keep the mule, teach the youth to work day and night. Invest in time, protect your life. Hit the hood, abandoned houses. It's time we buy back our own shit. Black on black businesses, start gentrifying our own. Long time they did us wrong, but some of this is our fault. Trying to fix that moral compass of a racist man, and we got lost. Main goal, be self-sufficient, so if you're with it, let's boss up. My bad check for owning slaves, I hate to say, but it won't come.
I just wanna ball, wanna hit the mall. I just wanna get everything that I'm owed. I just wanna stun, cause I came from nine. 40 acres in a mule, we can be on. I just wanna ball, wanna hit the mall. I just wanna get everything that I'm owed. I just wanna start, cause I came from nine. 40 acres in a mule, we can be on.
I saw a black man with a pair of Jordans tell me about the lack of jobs. Had the funds, open up a shop, spend his money on a flashy car. He don't own not a single thing. White man this, white man that. Down from head to toe, white man kicks, white man hat. Must invest, start living out dreams. LLC, what you spending on jeans? Walls of Egypt know every little thing. To turn around and sell pyramid scheme. System broke, all this I know. I'll never say that isn't fact. But every time you get a dime, you hurry up just to give it back.
I just wanna ball, wanna hit the mall. I just wanna get everything that I I just want a son, cause I came from nine. 40 acres in a mule, we can be our own. I just wanna ball, wanna hit the mall. I just wanna get everything that I'm owe. I just wanna stunt, cause I came from nine. 40 acres in a mule, we could be our own.
Ever since the end of slavery, Africans in America have been hoping for and seeking reparations for wrongs done against them for centuries. Initially, after the U.S. Civil War ended, Africans were offered 40 acres of land and a mule to work the land that they had worked without pay for centuries. This promise was never fulfilled. The great abolitionist and religious leader Sojourner Truth, who was once a captive, called for reparation, saying, "America owes to my people some of the dividends. I shall make them understand that there is a debt to the Negro people which they can never repay. At least then, they must make amends." From the day it was first uttered to this day, literally in the shadow of bondage, the voices of black people called for reparation. It may surprise some, but the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. added his voice to that call. In his 1963-64 book, Why We Can't Wait, King wrote, "No amount of gold could provide an adequate compensation for the exploitation and humiliation of the Negro in America down through the centuries. Not all the wealth of this affluent society could meet the bill. Yet, a price can be placed on unpaid wages." King may not have said the word reparations, but he certainly stated the idea. Recently, the Movement for Black Lives, known also as the Black Lives Matter Movement, issued a platform of issues important to black well-being. Among the issues raised, reparations for descendants of African captives. Even more recently, a United Nations working group of experts on people of African descent, working for some 6 years, has concluded that U.S. slavery was a crime against humanity, and the U.S. government should pay reparations to the descendants of those humans who were wronged. The U.N. experts met with members of half a dozen U.S. government agencies, including the Departments of Health and Human Services, Labor, and Justice. They visited several major American cities, north, south, east, and west. Reparations may have come of age after two centuries of being ignored and shunned. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Hard Knock Radio. Rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
My last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
On the move. I want to thank Mr. Louis Farrakhan and the millions more for the kind invitation to join y'all here. As we gather in person or electronically, we do so in a time of peril. We do so in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, when the state showed us all that they don't give a damn about black lives.
The angry leaders that frame Mumia are the same names blamed for Hurricane Katrina. See, the levees would break, the waters would crush, and President Bush, he would forsake the poor and oppressed. So just from the smaller Katrinas, we experience a deadly effects in all arenas. Every year, public schools miseducate the poor, destroying any chance to advance and get more, man. Taxes pay for the oppression we experience. Police too brutal for me to mention, it gets really tense. Consumers of the media filled with ignorance, poisoning our minds with gimmicks and violent images. The daily hurricanes of hate and indifference, experience behind the prison gate on some... courthouse laws and rules they reveal are threats to our welfare and not tools of our will. So just
but every day of our lives, we see small but no less lethal Hurricane Katrina's. Every year, in public schools, millions of Black, Latino, and poor kids are miseducated, thereby destroying, as surely as any hurricane, their life hopes and chance.
We need the boom in the millions to bring true social power to civilians. Don't gotta swallow the one that you follow and free your mind from the mud that you wallow in. Hey, from the confusion of social repression and destitution, there is only one solution to this intrusion. The movement of millions to bring forth a revolution. Now who's in? Those engaged in the struggle for freedom and justice and the liberation of political prisoners. We need those dedicated to change so that rich and poor children are educated the same. Yeah, we need the movement to resist the fraction that brought you patriot acts but not patriotic actions. We need the movement that ignites, not divides us, despite all the trauma, cause my people are survivors.
We need a movement of millions to build true social power, to free our minds and our bodies from the mud that we languish in. We need a movement of millions to transform our current social reality of repression and destitution. We need a movement of millions to bring back light to the eyes of our people, to engage in a struggle for freedom, for justice, and for liberation. We need a movement of millions of the poor, of workers, of women, of youth, of students, of prisoners, of all those dedicated to change, to build independent organizations that can't be bought or sold and will do the work necessary to be free.
You just don't go through with it. You say you know the way to go, and I should follow. But all of your empty promises leave me hollow. And oh, how do I trust you?
West Coast, Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast. That I can't fix, cause I can do it in the mix. And if your man gives you trouble just to move out on a double, and you don't let it trouble your brain, cause away goes trouble down the drain. Said away goes trouble down the drain.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Are you a fan of early rock and roll, doo-wop, rhythm and blues, and 70s rock? If so, The Roots of Rock and Roll is the show for you, and KBOO Portland is the place to be Friday afternoons at 3. Dale Farr will give you a history lesson from the birth of rock and roll through the 50s and 60s. And Ray Bodwell will mine the 60s and 70s for the deep cuts, hidden gems, and variety that you won't hear on generic classic rock stations. So tune in to The Roots of Rock and Roll, Fridays at 3 p.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
This is
KBOO Portland.
You are about to cross the border.